From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
South of Market.
From Albany.
Hayes Valley.
Rock Ridge in Oakland.
I'm from the Civic Center. I live across the street.
Coming up, the first of a two-part special on education and innovation in Oakland schools. We'll learn lessons on YouTube.
We were pretty excited because the student had attempted this problem 77 times. We weren't seeing that kind of effort at all before. The student did not give up.
Set our debates to a beat.
I ended up loving it for the same reason I love rap, because I can express my ideas in a free open world and have people listen, which is something I've been craving for like years now.
And we'll keep the learning going long after classes end.
It's a very new idea to really have people who actually care enough that you would tell them what's going on deeper behind the surface.
It's a special edition of Cross Currents. Stay tuned. Today we're exploring innovative approaches to education, new ways schools are trying to solve old problems. We'll begin in the Oakland Unified School District, where for many students, success doesn't just mean getting good grades. It means preparing for an eventual job, maybe college, and learning to live independently while handling the challenges of growing up. In 2011, 30% of African American students in Oakland dropped out of school, double the dropout rate statewide. And among the most likely to leave were young black men. These are big challenges, but the staff at Oakland High School on MacArthur Boulevard doesn't think they're insurmountable. It's one of seven schools recruiting young men for a new district project called the Manhood Development Program. It aims to keep young men in school and help them build life skills. Reporter Angela Hopkins takes us inside.
I'm walking alongside the mural called Beautiful Struggle in front of Oakland High School. Frida Kahlo, Che Guevara, and Malcolm X are just a few of many social activists portrayed here. This mural also reflects a student body made up predominantly of students of color. 51% are Asian, 29% black, 16% Latino, and 1% white. After I've entered the school's gate, guarded by security officers, I'm free to roam the hallway in search of the Manhood Development Program's office. It's here where I meet Mr. Tiago Robinson.
I dropped out in ninth grade. I didn't have me when I was going in school. I couldn't relate to anyone.
Robinson has been running the Manhood Development Program at Oakland High since 2009.
I mean, you hear all these things like, you know, go to school, stay in school, but nobody really actually teach you how to do those things. It's just easier to say, hey, go to class.
Robinson doesn't just say, go to class. It's his job to teach these boys how to become men.
So manhood is just really just teaching them how to be a young man, how to be accountable for your actions.
How to be accountable, but also how to learn life's lessons.
You are going to make mistakes, but it's how you make your mistake and how you learn from your mistake and getting up and just striving to be the best that you can be.
Being the best you can be is no easy task. According to recent reports, 20% of African-American males are chronically absent, while suspension rates for African-American males are six times higher than that of whites. The Manhood Development Program is stressing the importance of education in the most realistic way possible.
My brother's 2 years older than me. He's 36 years old. He has been a gangster rapper since we were 14. Y'all find it funny, I know.
Wearing a variety of hoodies, blue jeans, and baseball caps, 14 young Afro-American men, along with Robinson, are gathered to hear Mr. Flagg speak. But this isn't just any ordinary classroom. This manhood development class is where guest speakers like Flagg come every week to talk about how education can provide options to the street life.
So my brother has been, doing this for a long time, man. I came into the kitchen one time, my parents were going, he had a razor blade, he had an old, little aspirin or Excedrin or something. He was carving this thing up. I'm like, what are you doing?
Cutting rocks.
He's cutting some rocks, man. I tell the story to say he dropped out of school in the ninth grade. That was his last year of high school. Hayward High, he dropped out. And to make little ends meet now, he has a whole pickup truck. He drives around and he helps folks haul their stuff. That's his hustle.
Unlike his brother, Mr. Flagg is a college graduate and currently represents Hield College. Later during this visit, he will also discuss college programs the students may be interested in. But first, they'll have to get college ready. That's Jasmine Noble's job, another manhood development mentor.
We are preparing just, for them to take exams so they know how to fill out the different CSUs, UC applications, community college.
College readiness is just one phase of the program. Getting through to them is another matter entirely.
Okay, you're dealing with 9th and 10th graders, you know. First of all, they don't know you. You have to build trust. You have to bridge that gap. So just giving them like a little history about me, they respect that because, again, it's like children, youth, they're going to watch you more than anything. You can give them a full hour lecture of all the scholarship opportunities you may have, but a student wants to know, how did you do it? You know, coming from where I'm coming from, how did you make this happen? And I think that's the most important thing that I can show. And I can come with resources that can be used.
Like her students, Jasmine grew up in Oakland's inner city and says she attended subpar schools. Eventually, however, she reached college.
I still kept my goal. You know, it took me 7 years to finish undergrad, but I had a goal and I stuck to it.
She stuck to it through hardship and grief. One of her brothers was murdered.
You know, and then I share that with my students sometimes, and they respect that because, unfortunately, you know, the natural cause of a lot of African-American males in the inner city communities is homicides, you know. So it's like, unfortunately, that's the topic of discussion. But I also let the students know that's not normal. That's something's wrong with that. And so I just use that as my motivation.
Utilizing motivation like that is one of the goals of the manhood development class. As I continue to sit in on the session, Mr. Flatt tells the inspirational story of African-American boxer Andre Ward, who grew up in the East Bay, trained at a gym in Oakland, and eventually fought his way to a gold medal at the 2004 Olympics.
For boxing, right, if you're in the gym, you prepare for a major title fight. Your gym, you might have one speed bag, an old kind of worn out heavy bag, and that's about it, right? But the fighter you're training against, state-of-the-art facility. Can you still out-train that person?
Yeah.
Can you still put yourself in a better situation to out and fight?
Yeah.
What does it take?
Hard work.
Dedication.
Initiatives.
Oh, man, I love all those words.
Effort.
All of that. Hard work, initiative, dedication. Right. Now, some folks are in a fight, they don't even know they're getting ready for a fight. They don't even know that you're getting ready for a fight. So they're not even trained. They don't even hit the bag once.
Fighting your way through obstacles is one of the many themes of the Manhood Development Program. Jasmine Noble says hearing from successful black men is teaching them what it is to be a man.
Them also seeing, you know, black men who've went to college and just like seeing it for themselves, you know, people that can relate to them. I think that's the goal of the program, to actually see. So if you see, you can believe it, you know, and kind of like teaching them what faith is by actually seeing it, because sometimes that can be abstract for a lot of people.
Tiago Robinson wants to make sure this program is concrete, not abstract.
If they fell in a class, it's mandatory that they have to make that class up. So they have to spend out of the week at least 2 days with that teacher to kind of figure out what went wrong. And I do that is because then they build a relationship with their teacher. And then also they can kind of see, you know, where they made their mistakes. So the next 6 weeks, that grade would go up.
I asked Tiago why he thinks the Manhood Development Program matters.
It matters because it's important. I think it's good to pass the torch on to the younger generation to do what they want to do. Because, you know, I'm going to be an old man at one point, and I want them to be able to take care of the country and take care of the city and run things the right way. And I think they can do it, but they just need to be taught.
Although there is no easy way out of Oakland's inner city, through hard work, initiative, dedication, and courage, these 9th and 10th graders have a fighting chance of making their dreams come true. Take a moment and listen to some of the dreams students shared with me.
My name is Barry Williams, and what I see myself doing is being an owner of Sony.
My name is Jesse, and I see myself as a fire chief and a doctor.
My name is Kenneth. I see myself going into the Navy.
My name is Naquan. I see myself as somebody in criminal justice, a lawyer, or a chef.
My name is Byron.
And I see myself as an engineer.
My name is James, and I see myself being a lawyer.
My name is Rico, and I want to be an engineer.
My name is Tiago, and I see myself doing what I'm doing.
Which is trying to steer his Oakland High students to college and success beyond high school. For Cross Currents, I'm Angela Hopkins.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. A few miles east of Oakland High is Unity High School. It's a charter school so small that it rents its campus from the neighboring Lutheran church. Oakland Unified has 33 charter schools, which have more flexibility than traditional schools to experiment with new teaching techniques. At Unity, that means taking math homework to YouTube.
Let's say we have two lines over here. Let's call this line right over here line AB. So A and B both sit on this line. And let's say we have this
other
line.
This is one in a series of online and video exercises that promise to provide a free world-class education to anyone, anywhere. It's called Khan Academy, and it was created by educator Salman Khan. While video lectures are a big part of what the Academy offers, Unity High focuses on the interactive lessons. They encourage independent learning. Reporter Stephanie Shara takes us into Unity's classrooms to see how students respond to an automated teacher.
My name, 144 plus 120 equals 264.
At Unity Charter High School, all in-class and homework happens on a tablet or at a desktop. Here in ninth grade algebra, students are armed with not only pencils, paper, and calculators, but school-provided tablets that stream Khan Academy, a free online academic program that Unity staff see as a different approach to getting homework done.
-6. Finally. Okay.
We also recognize that even with our increased emphasis on homework, we still are not getting that much homework done. Even when it's handed in, it wasn't always done.
That's Peter McIntosh, a math teacher at Unity. He's a user and advocate of Khan because he believes it changes how students do math. In the past, for instance,
they copied it. Someone did it for them. Or basically, they basically handed in a sheet of paper with some stuff on it. When you really looked at it, it was more of an attempt just to hand in a piece of paper and assume they'd get some partial credit. But the point still being, they weren't doing enough work to really absorb the material, regardless of how well we presented the material.
And McIntosh says Unity did present the information in a variety of ways, but students weren't using it to do homework. McIntosh suspects that most students looked at the problems in the textbook, perhaps attempted them for a minute or two, and gave up when they didn't understand them quickly. Those who still wanted a grade on the assignment would write as much as they could to give the illusion that work was put in, thinking it was better to get some points rather than no points.
In the book, the homework is easy to sort of fake it and get some partial credit. You can't fake it on Khan.
I thought the point of this
Khan
is to practice.
No, it's to learn.
I asked McIntosh if his class still uses textbooks. He says in that respect, nothing has actually changed.
The students never used them before, and they don't know.
Now, the important thing to realize is just what we've deduced here. The vertical angles are equal, and the corresponding angles at the same points of intersection are also equal.
Khan is interactive, almost like a video game. After students log in, they can choose a skill that they would like to work on, angles in this class's case. A non-threatening cream screen appears within the browser with instructions written at the top. Things like find the value of angle C with a figure drawn below.
Lowercase c, so lowercase c for the angle.
Most of McIntosh's class uses paper and pencil to solve the problem off the tablet screen, but Khan does allow you to pull up a scratch pad to write in different colors right beneath the instructions. According to McIntosh, Khan one-ups the textbook in its ability to provide quick help for each problem.
So a kid is working on a problem involving parallel lines and alternate interior angles, a little bit confused.
And so we say that alternate interior angles are equivalent. So you see that there are kind
of... They can push a button, get a video, watch the first 20 seconds of it. Oh, that's it. That's enough. I get it. Stop it. And, I mean, that transaction is so fast, so direct, so efficient.
Khan both helps and encourages students. Click the orange button for a hint or watch an explanation by clicking the video icon. Earn one leaf for completing the problem, a second for completing it without using all the hints, and a third for completing it on the first try with no hints. Once students know the answer, they type it into a box and click the green button. The green button will vibrate and read "try again" if a student answers incorrectly. When a student does get the right answer, a smiley face appears and the student can move on to the next question. It may seem like Khan eliminates the need for teachers because students can sit in front of the screen and figure it out for themselves. But McIntosh is quick to defend this new teaching process. Khan, he explains, takes the guesswork out of the equation by giving him the tools to track his students' progress. So when one student is struggling, he can see how and where and help. Now, when he does a problem on the board, it's a concept everyone is struggling with.
I spend much less time grading papers, much less time preparing exercises, much more time looking at data and thinking, okay, what do they not get? Why don't they get it? What's the part they're not getting?
As McIntosh provides his class with extra examples and individual attention, Khan teaches struggling students through repetition.
Like, if you do a problem and you get one wrong, it makes you do a whole stack more, but that makes sure that you know what you're doing.
Ninth grader Diego Rosas is talking about a set of 8 homework problems called a stack. Because students have to do an additional 8 problems every time they answer one question wrong, many worry that Khan forces students to do too much work. Diego predicts he does about 5 extra hours of work each week on Khan. But other students, like Marcela Rosaga, complain they put in much more time.
When I miss, like, 2 problems, it takes me, like, 30 more tries to get the whole stack finished. On one stack I finished recently, I spent 7 hours and 47 minutes trying to finish it.
Principal Samuel Brewer acknowledges the worry, but sees the stacks as a way for students to take ownership of their math progress.
You know, one sort of critic of what we were doing is saying, well, you just showed me a screen that showed a student had done this problem 77 times. You know, that's drill and kill. That's not learning. But the student, we were pretty excited because the student had attempted this problem 77 times. We weren't seeing that kind of effort at all before. The student did not give up. They took a couple hints. They got it wrong a few times. It's part of the learning process. They've now mastered that material, and they're ready for higher level stuff.
The evidence of Principal Brewer's theory is in the numbers. Since the school started using Khan last summer, Unity has increased its 9th grade math scores from 76 to 94% on the California standardized test. That's a 38% increase, which Principal Brewer attributes to what Unity likes to call the Khan effect.
2 or 3 years ago, we had a huge majority of our students in those lowest performance bands. Now we have almost none. So we think that Khan is a big part of that answer.
By continuing to use Khan Academy in their math classes, Unity Charter High School hopes to give students a new sense of responsibility and control of their academic success.
That's really, I think, the secret, is getting the kid to develop real confidence in their ability, and then just to kind of get them over the hump that it's okay to struggle with this stuff. We're going to make you struggle, but feeling almost emotionally okay with this is really uncertain and I'm not sure I can do this, but staying in it and getting it done. That's what we're seeing kids do, and I think that's the most exciting part, is the perseverance to seeing that develop.
At Unity Charter High School in Oakland, I'm Stephanie Shara for Cross Currents.
Is your school trying something new? How's it working? You can let us know at our Facebook page. We're KALW News. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Learning in Oakland isn't just digital. One forward-thinking project takes students back in time.
If we wish to regain our natural-born rights as Englishmen, then we must fight for them.
Formal debate is an ancient Greek tradition that we've made a basic part of our political process. Two people get together and exchange rhetorical barbs over contentious topics. Each speaker argues a case using evidence and citing sources. When the time is up, the opponent counters.
Dickinson of Pennsylvania.
One colony cannot be allowed to take its sister colonies headlong into the maelstrom of war. Yeah.
T.
Teachers in Oakland want their students to get those critical thinking skills, but they also want them to speak from their own experiences. So now students can compete in something called urban debate.
Why am I the descendant of hard living conditions that'll make the realest killers want to quiver in their boots? Why is racism had to plague my family's roots? Why the owners was eating lobster, we were starving on potato soup and the garbage available.
Reporter Kim Ip recently attended an urban debate tournament, and she brings us this story. Urban debate has existed since 1985 and has continued to evolve, making it a national phenomenon. It's popular locally, too. Today's tournament is sponsored by the Bay Area Urban Debate League.
Okay, I'm ready.
Flash.
We're on the UC Berkeley campus, and debate rounds are happening simultaneously in many classrooms. Students are typing furiously on laptops and flipping through papers to do any last-minute tweaking on their arguments. These tournaments are no Saturday morning cartoon marathon. The day begins at 8:30 a.m. when 400 Bay Area high schoolers show up ready to debate.
Answer that.
The topic this round is transportation infrastructure. The teams are Skyline High School versus Cal Prep Academy. Debater Leonard Oscar Irving Thomas, otherwise known as Prodigy on the Beat, is a 15-year-old sophomore of Skyline. He lets me tag along on his debate adventure. I'm lucky enough to sit in on a round and catch one example of a developing urban debate style, rap debate, or what Leonard calls being narrativical.
By being narrativical, we are using personal narratives, personal stories to build it. Like, for instance, when I was talking, doing the rap song, lay away, pistol play, everybody on lay away, so I lay awake and wait for the gunshots around my spot to fade away. I was using a personal experience of the fact, yeah, there was like there was shooting at my house last week, the week before that, the week before that, and the week before that. So I'm bringing it in there to express what the problem is, instead of using somebody's evidence from some Harvard professor that's never actually been in an urban area, because we are the experts of urban areas because that's where we live.
Unlike traditional debate, which relies strictly on research and hard evidence to win the argument, urban debate allows for personal stories. That appeals to Thomas.
I ended up loving it for the same reason I love rap, because I can express my ideas in a free open world and have people listen, which is something I've been craving for like years now.
Leonard says urban debate offers a forum for students who feel limited by the norms of traditional debate.
I bring my culture in when I do hip-hop. When I rap, I speak the language of the people I see in front of me instead of talking about the norms.
Norms are regularly challenged in urban debate, and Balboa High debater Miranda Pettiford is no stranger to questioning the rigidity of debate structure.
If you want to do more education, then a parliamentary debate style or an open forum would be better than coming in with a policy debate with a plan like this.
Miranda is referring to Leonard's plan, to start a movement to liberate the oppressed by educating minorities about the history of racial violence against them. She argues against the debate structure of timed rounds, saying that it doesn't allow for plans such as Leonard's to take flight.
Well, that's just, you know, my opinion, but since everything about here is opinion, it's awesome! Okay.
Time's up! It's Leonard's turn to battle for Skyline.
Politicians keep hollering about problems, but I ain't gonna vote. Keep talking about change, but we floating in the same old boat. Yo, so how am I supposed to feel when the president spoke? When he ain't never had to struggle. He ain't never been broke. He ain't never rolled through the ghetto. He ain't never been close. Trusting the government's like trusting the mother effing devil with notes, and I'm a rebel with quotes. Lifestyles of the young, black, and reckless, a generation of Negroes strapped up and asking questions like, why I ain't got ish? Instead, I let the liquor fill my toxins, and as I begin to sip, I get up. I would like to...
Urban debate encourages unconventional debate styles like Leonard's, who integrates rap into his arguments. But urban debate also adheres to the structure of traditional debate, where two opposing teams formulate pro and con arguments, and strict time limits are enforced. Despite these formalities, debaters are able to create impassioned arguments that are relevant to the debater and his or her community.
As long as the urban communities remain in this hell, this third world that they are in right now, then we got a problem. And we need to figure out who can solve that, because the urban people are the oppressed and they don't do jack diddly squats. Well, we are going directly to the problem. They're using the United States federal government. Well, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. That's going to be the end of my speech.
Two rounds down, one more to go. It's now 1:30, and Leonard and his debate partner are just getting into their third round.
You have just a minute 15.
I believe it's 5 minutes of prepos and speed rounds. I believe it's prepos also.
Yes.
Through urban debate, Leonard has found a community to thrive in personally and politically.
I want debate to be able to allow people to come in with whatever their particular style is. All of that should be able to be diversified within the Bay Area Urban Debate League, and it shouldn't have to be created separately. So simply, we're just trying to bring diversity in debate, and being hip-hop allows culture into it and us to bring in our circumstance. So that's what I wanted to bring to debate. I wanted to bring me in. I'm a hip-hop artist. I wanted to bring me into it and let other people do the same.
Leonard came to Urban Debate about a year ago. He's been rapping since the third grade. Before getting involved with Skyline Debate Team, he realized his rap was going nowhere because the songs were all about money, cars, and women, just like everybody else's.
Honestly, I didn't even feel like I was doing as good as just another regular rapper and talking all that. But as soon as I stepped into something that I felt beneficial, I felt like meaning, and I really wanted to do that.
Debate gives Leonard a new platform for his rhymes and the opportunity to cultivate a new style.
Debate I use is simply a way to, it's a way of learning how to express yourself. Many people my age don't know about political ideas, but once they step into the debate room, they can learn about not only the United States federal government, the judicial legislatures, and all those particular branches, but they can learn just how decisions are made so they know how to put their own input and make their own change.
Leonard says debating has helped him change his own life, too.
We are alternative debaters because it opens doors to minorities into the debate world that has helped me. Ma'am, when I started in debate, I had a 2.5. Now I hold here and stand on this stage with a 3.86. That I've learned about the different ways of which the government works. I learned about how society simply because of the government. Also, and if debate can help me out, I am no particular instance. It can help out my peers.
Who's on the stage?
The tournament ends with a trophy ceremony.
In second place, from Skyline High, Chris Marquez and Lynn Emily Thomas.
Skyline High School debaters dance for a minute of MC Hammer glory. They have the most debaters at the tournament out of any school. Leonard moves confidently at the front of the crowd, knowing he not only has the title of Best Varsity Speaker, but he's found a community to express himself. For Cross Currents, I'm Kim Ibb.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Here's an idea to debate. How do you get students outside during the day, despite years of budget cuts restricting education to bare-bones classroom basics? Right now, 65 Oakland schools have working educational gardens. The sizes may vary, but the number of gardens is, well, growing. Reporter Logan Birdsall takes us to the heart of an East Oakland high school where a small but prosperous garden has taken root and flourished.
At Castlemont High School in East Oakland, wedged between the campus, parking lot, and football field, live four chickens.
Where we have four chickens and two roosters.
And not just chickens. Tucked behind Castlemont campus, there's a small but incredibly abundant garden, which, under the supervision of garden coordinator Frankie Grace, is entirely run and maintained by students. In fact, the day I visit, Frankie is kneeling alongside them, chatting happily and pulling weeds, and she lets three of the seasoned students direct what work needs to be done.
Good job on this bed over here, you guys. You guys can take basil and stuff home, too.
My name's Margie, and I'm a junior at LPS College Park.
That's Leadership Public High, a charter school that shares the Castlemont campus. Margie's been working in the garden since 2010.
And being in the garden has been really a great, amazing learning experience for me. I came from knowing nothing about gardening to knowing so much that I can run it myself as well.
And she's not the only one. Out of the six students earning money for their work in the garden, three of them have so much experience that they roam the place freely, spotting sick plants and removing them, or replanting seedlings that have strayed outside their planter boxes.
We should make it bigger, like have its own bed.
The space for the garden is small, but the crowding only makes it feel more abundant. Trees and vines growing up around the fences add a feeling of seclusion from the busy city surrounding it. Everything inside the fences is completely student-made, from the chicken coop to the pond to the tool shed, which was made by student Neo Palayo.
He finished the whole thing by himself, the whole shed. Yeah, and we're really proud of him for that.
But most of the space is filled with colorful wooden planter boxes.
In each bay we have different things. For example, we have right here just plain tomatoes and have some bell peppers.
Senior Arangel Palayo, no relation to Neo, points to three beds of tomatoes, completely overflowing with ripe fruit. They also have another bed of strawberries, watermelon, squash.
And another beds, we just have like herbs and stuff like that.
Like lavender, lemon verbena, yerba buena.
Some spearmint too.
On the other side of the garden, beyond the greenhouse, there are three different kinds of composts.
We have a preset compost and then a rotating compost.
And the coolest composting technique I've ever seen, a worm bin. Margie shows it to me.
So we basically feed them with food scraps, like old fruit peels and vegetables and rotten fruits. And then they would eat the rotten fruits and then they would poop.
The garden's only been around for a few years. It was founded in 2009 by biology teacher Sarah Johnson and a handful of students. Margie joined Johnson's project in the garden's second year.
Basically, she started everything. This was a whole lot of nothing at first. There was so much work to do, and she was able to convince kids to work in the garden.
Margie and Arangel say it was Johnson who inspired their passion for gardening in the first place. But Sarah Johnson left Oakland last year, and Margie and Arangel are the only students left who worked with her.
And then things just kind of changed because she left. Now we're kind of the ones left to take care of what she started.
And the future of the garden is up to them. These students have a real sense of ownership and pride for their work, and the garden exists now only through their efforts. But Margie and Arangel won't be around much longer. Eventually they'll graduate, and other students will have to take up the mantle.
Hopefully we can, fix what's left and get more kids and inspire more kids about gardening.
We plan this year to actually help recruit more people into working here and actually getting motivated into working in the garden, just like how I did or any other of us.
And they've already made some progress.
Do you have fun today in your first day in the garden?
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
That's Simi, a new recruit.
I already know what to do, but just waiting for somebody to show me.
It's a start, and a promising one at that. For Cross Currents, I'm Logan Birdsall in Oakland.
Working in a garden is one way to cope with stress, but it's just one way, and that's not always enough. Many Oakland teens have experienced trauma. They've seen violence in their neighborhoods, or they've lost parents or loved ones. The emotional stress can be hard to take, especially without support. Ever Forward is trying to offer that support. It's an after-school program in Oakland. Reporter Lizzie Schultz explores the approach Ever Forward's leaders take and how it's working.
Yeah, you're harder now. Next group that goes up, we're going to put everything in the truck and then we'll go up there.
I'm in the halls of Arise High School in Fruitvale. It's a little past 4 and students are scattered around preparing for their camping trip.
So you packed a bear? Why?
Because, you know, every man needs something to snuggle with.
Carlos Pena, one of the Ever Forward members, says he's excited.
Yes, because we always have fun. I mean, I know it's going to be fun, but sometimes you have to expect the unexpected. So yeah, I don't know what we're going to do this year, but I know it's going to be fun.
This after-school club is going on a one-night camping trip to Lake Chabot, just outside of Oakland. Members from Arise and Fremont High chapters will be spending the night in the woods together with students they may barely know.
It's very new to them.
That's Ashanti Branch. He founded the Ever Forward Club and is in charge of this camping trip.
It's a very new idea to really have people who actually care enough that you would tell them what's going on deeper behind the surface. And so this camping trip is really about the beginning of the year, kind of a connection for the new members and older members to come together to have that community building.
This club has been Branch's passion for the past 9 years. Senior Omar Bernal, president of the club, has been in the program for 4 years now.
The Ever Forward Club is, I could honestly say, it saved my life.
Bernal says he sees Ashanti Branch and the other mentors as father figures.
You feel like they're always there, even when they're not. You know, I always get a call from Ashanti saying, well, what are you doing right now? Shouldn't you be doing this?
Before he joined the Ever Forward Club, Bernal's personal life and academic life were headed in a downward spiral.
I got held back ninth grade because I was coping with my life in negative ways. I was out with friends. I never did my homework. And I used to blame it all on the absence of my father because he was never in my life. He was never in mine and my sister's life. So I always use him as an excuse, not having a father figure there showing me what's right or wrong.
He says the program has helped to shift his thinking in a more positive direction.
Devin and Ashanti made it crystal clear that I'm going to college. You know, no matter what doubt in my head I have, I always let them know that, well, you know, I'm thinking about not going to college. And he's like, well, then you're going to need to change that. You know, whatever it is, we'll make it work.
That can-do attitude is the idea behind the club. Always moving forward, always improving who you can be. Ashanti Branch got this idea around 10 years ago when his job as a civil engineer was not feeding his soul. After finishing his master's at Mills College, he began teaching at San Lorenzo High School.
Teaching mathematics, and I really thought that what students needed was that they needed a teacher who cared and a teacher who was prepared and a teacher who had passion. And I was all those things, but I still had these African-American and Latino boys in my class that weren't passing. And I was like, what's the problem? Like, I'll come early, I'll stay late, I'll buy you lunch. I always got food in my room. Like, what do you need?
Branch started researching and found that 47% of African-American males and 43% of Latino males were failing half or more of their classes. He realized something was wrong.
I'm wanting to reach them, but I can't reach them either. So I said, well, maybe I need to ask them. So I invited some young men together, and I said, look, I'm going to buy you lunch once a week. You come to this class, I'll buy you lunch once a week, every Thursday. And let's just talk. Let's talk about the good, the bad, the ugly. Let's talk about more positive than negative. But let's talk about what is it that's in the way of you living the life that you want to live. And from that, the Ever Forward Club started.
9 years later, the Ever Forward Club has two locations with over 55 members and a few teachers who help coordinate the trips and meetings. Branch is from Oakland, and his life story has been a way to connect with students.
I grew up without a father, from a single mother on welfare. She worked hard to put herself through school so she could provide a little bit better for us, but we were still broke, right? We were still struggling, right? So I'd share them with my story, and I say, you know, my story may be different than yours. You may have it better than me, or you may have it worse than me, but everyone has it better than some and worse than most, right? And how would you decide that? What do you want to do about it? And so for them to know that they can come to me, and no matter what they have done or what challenge they're facing, that I'm not there to judge them, that I'm there to say, so what do you think you should do?
Branch has taught math at both Fremont and Arise High School, but just this year he became a case manager at Fremont. A teacher by day and a mentor during all other hours, the executive director says it has been a struggle to find the funding for the Ever Forward Club.
When you're in the work, I'm in the trenches every day teaching and working at schools, I don't have a chance to go out and mingle with the people who have the money, right? Because I'm teaching the kids.
Branch is not only teaching these students, he is reaching them. Through the weekly meetings, field trips, and college tours, Branch and the rest of his team are making sure students achieve their goals.
And I feel like a lot of youth here in Oakland really need this type of support, you know, positive role models, both women and men.
That's Senior Omar Bernal again. He's realized the benefits of this brotherhood program.
The Ever Forward Club, was really a group of support academically and emotionally, where I realized that I do have goals in life after spending a whole life of saying you're not going to amount to anything. It took me an extra year, but I'm still here looking really good to colleges because of the Ever Forward Club and all the different opportunities that it offered me and just all the different leadership roles that it bestowed upon me that really made me mature for my age.
The question is not if this program works. These students have a 100% graduation rate from high school and 100% are being accepted into college. The question is how the district, as well as the community, can make sure that Ever Forward Club continues to thrive.
We still have tons of stuff upstairs.
So you have other people there to help?
They're ready to head off on the camping trip. Teachers figure out who is going in which van while students load the small truck, overflowing with sleeping bags and food.
Okay, otherwise, I mean, you don't have room, do you?
These teens are grateful for the opportunities this club has to offer and are full of enthusiasm for the trip ahead. For Cross Currents, I'm Lizzie Schultz. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. There are a lot of ways adults try to help students learn, by teaching, through art, music, and enrichment programs, and by joining forces with other adults to try and make education better. When you think of your local school's PTA, what do you think of? Moms, right? Well, send them out of the room. Now picture an all-male branch of the PTA. In this piece from our archives, Celeste Fikiri reports on a group of dedicated men who are trying something different to help their kids succeed in school.
Okay, well, then I'm going to talk about that. I'm just going to mention that at the PTA. The Knights are taking that on.
Well, what about jumping back to the...
It's 6:30 in the evening, and I'm at Claremont Middle School in Oakland. The group of enthusiastic men just finished discussing typical PTA issues, like what their next fundraising event will be or where to hold their next meeting. But what sets them apart is the fact that they're all men. They call themselves the Knights of the Round Table.
The mascots, the Knights, I said, well... Let's call it the Knights of the Round Table. You know, a group of knights, fathers, father-like, coming together to bring together ideas and try to be involved with the schools and with the, you know, again, with the faculty, with the students. And again, our number one priority are the kids.
Ken Trammell is founder of the Knights and the father of a seventh grader. When his daughter started Claremont Middle School, he noticed very few men involved at the school. He had heard that there used to be a dad's club, but it never really got off the ground, so he decided to see what he could do.
You know, middle school, I think, is one of those pathways where either you're going to go left or right, and it's kind of at a time where kids really need that support as much as possible, and the parents, because everyone's going through a transition.
Fellow Knight, Carol Moore, says the men work to make campus repairs and help the kids feel pride in their school. But they're also trying to show students that men care about them and their school.
I think traditionally our communities don't see enough of that, and I think that we're a close group that is really wanting to be visible and participating and supportive, not to just our own kids, but to this entire community. And I think we really all share that mission and that joy, and that we're here to do it together.
Tonight, they're doing just that, as they organize upcoming meetings and fundraisers and ways to get the kids involved. These men not only want to raise money for the school, Moore says, they also want to contribute to the kids' lives on a personal level and make a statement in the community.
Trying to do some work around the campus to kind of beautify things a little bit, work on some painting here and there, some new planting and stuff in front, kind of clean up the front of the, you know, the entrance, which has kind of gotten beat up and so forth. But just some things to make the campus... Right. Look better and for our kids to take pride in it.
The Knights of the Round Table have only been around for a year, but they've already developed into a fundraising machine. They recently had a pancake breakfast that raised $4,000 and an open-air movie night where they watched Indiana Jones, raising $400.
We're small but mighty.
Spoken like a true knight. The Knights have high hopes of becoming a powerful force at the school. These men feel like they have a moral obligation to the kids, especially to students who don't have good role models at home. By contributing to the kids' lives, they hope to have a lasting impact for years to come. In Oakland, I'm Celeste Fikiri.
Celeste Fikiri reported that story from Mills College. The Knights are now known as the Claremont Dads Club, and current members tell us that the group is going strong. Over 40 dads are active, in the schoolyard at lunch, playing sports and organizing games, and in fine form at a recent science night where the dads helped build a hovercraft and made ice cream with liquid nitrogen.
This is a special edition of Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. These days, we often hear that the gender gap is closing. Girls in high school are excelling in reading and writing and closing the gaps in math and science. And there are more young women going to college than men. However, the gender gap still remains large in certain industries, particularly engineering. Though girls and boys take math and science courses in roughly equal numbers in elementary, middle, and high school, women only earn a fifth of bachelor's degrees in engineering. Once they graduate, they make up just 10% of the engineering workforce. But the tide may be turning. In 2012, women earned 42% of undergraduate degrees in engineering at MIT and 25% of doctoral degrees. Oakland Technical High School is a leading contributor to this growing trend. Half of the Academy's students are female, and more than half of those young women go on to pursue engineering or architecture at top universities, including the University of California, Harvard, MIT, and many others. Reporter Laura Flynn has our report.
About 40 teenagers have their heads in their hands, and some are even crying. This is Mr. Merrill's 11th grade geometrics class. The students all have just come from a crucial calculus exam and are about to take a quiz. But Mr. Merrill feels the intense energy emitting from the group and instead postpones the quiz till tomorrow.
Go outside where the truck is, blow off some steam, don't hurt yourselves.
My name's Parker Merrill, and I've been teaching in Oakland since 1971.
Mr. Merrill and his colleague, Carl Hertzstein, founded the Engineering Academy at Oakland Technical High School in 1986.
We discovered that students were going off to engineering schools and were just failing the physics part of it miserably.
So they re-examined how schools were teaching.
And we found that all the schools in Oakland were doing a survey physics, where you learn a little bit about a lot of different things in the world of physics. So we looked at the college curriculum and concentrated on just physics, mechanics, and heavy application of math in those physics classes.
And that formula did the trick. For over 20 years now, Oakland Tech's Engineering Academy has been sending more and more students to prestigious colleges and universities across the country. In 2009, the president of MIT came to visit after discovering a high concentration of students coming from the Engineering Academy to MIT.
The level of learning here is really so far above and beyond anything in high school that they tremendously astonished.
Throughout the country, the scientific community has been working hard to increase the number of women pursuing degrees and careers in engineering. Girls like Kelsey Higby are picking up on this trend.
I really like engineering. This is more math. And it's just spatial thinking. It's really interesting to figure out how objects are viewed in space.
Higby is not sure if engineering is a profession for her, but she says she's really enjoyed her experience in the Engineering Academy. Then there are girls like senior Ava Young, who has her heart set on becoming an engineer. Today in drafting class, she's navigating back and forth from an illustration of an engine spindle to the computer, where she's trying to recreate a 3D image of it. Ava thinks she is ready to take on the world. She can see the value in engineering beyond building bridges.
Engineers do so much. I mean, biomedical engineers make machinery to keep you alive, and civil and mechanical engineers they make things to make your life easier. I mean, I figured out there's so much stuff that you can do as an engineer that helps people. So that's kind of the brand I want to go on.
It's that kind of passion this program inspires. After 20 years, the Engineering Academy at Oakland Technical High School continues to send students to college prepared to excel in their math and science courses.
I have students all the time say that, you know, they're taking their first physics course in college and they're acing it, and they just have really no problem with it. And their professors are sort of like, you know, why do you know all this already? And say, well, I learned this as a junior in high school.
About half of the students in the program continue to pursue degrees in engineering after they graduate, and roughly half of these students are young women, according to Mr. Merrill. He says this program is in high demand. Only 65% of students who apply are accepted. And it's easy to see why. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics claims engineering-related jobs will be one of the fastest-growing occupations through 2014. In Oakland, I'm Laura Flynn.
And we want to hear your stories about the most innovative learning strategies you've seen in public education. You can give us a call and share your thoughts at 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106 and we'll try to get your story on the air. been listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from KLW News, co-produced with Mills College in Oakland. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff and Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Also, thanks to City Car Share for providing an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. Another edition of my mixtape, where people share songs that mean something special to them. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Take it away.
My name is Larry Latofsky of San Francisco, and my favorite song is Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto. The first time I heard it in my early 20s, I listen to it every chance I get. So whoever's playing it doesn't even matter. It's just incredible. And I'm still fascinated by how Beethoven does everything he does.
We are making these announcements to put to rest the notion that large marijuana businesses can shelter themselves under state law and operate without fear of federal enforcement.
There are some confused attorneys in the White House who need to hear the message that we are standing together for health care, we are standing together for our sick, and we are standing on the right side of history on this issue.
I'm Stephen Short. Stay informed on developments in California's medical marijuana industry by reading my online Cannabis News Roundup. You'll find it under the News tab at kalw.org.
Which side are you on?